Everything she said, don't pay any attention to it because I'm not that great. But it is an honor and a privilege to be here with you. My name is Barbara Long, and I am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. I want to thank Beth for inviting me to be here and for all the people. I know there's so many people that make putting on something like this. I've worked on many conventions, so I appreciate everyone. And I especially really appreciate the theme this year, the language of the heart. Because after being married to an alcoholic for 47 years and counting, I told him we had to make it 3 more years because I deserved to celebrate 50 years. So if he's going to leave, he can't leave until we do that. But it certainly is the language of the heart to have both of us in recovery in AA and in Al-Anon. And I am so glad that I have heard the message last night with Jay, and I went to the panel with my good friends, Bob and Francis, and I can't remember, Angela and Greg was the other couple. And both of them were so, both couples realized the importance of having that Al-Anon part. The AAs work on their sobriety, and that's what they need to work on. And the Al-Anons work on our relationships, because that's what goes haywire for us, right? And it is so good to be in the company of people who realize that we both need that peace, especially to work on relationships, our relationships with our higher power, with our people that we love, and with our people at work, our friends, wherever they might be. A quote from Lois Wilson, one of our founders, was that we should treat everyone as if they're an unrecovered Al-Anon. And I think that is a good way to go about our life with kindness and with love, because we don't know what's going on in their lives. And if we treat them as if we care about them and treat them with kindness, that is a good message, I think. I'm going to just start. I don't know how long I have.
About 45 minutes.
Okay. So I don't think I'll go that long. You can all breathe a sigh of relief. Oh, good. She's not going to talk for that long. But I do want to just start a little bit with my background. I was born and raised in the state of Kansas. And if any of you are familiar with that state, it was a dry state for many, many years. Where a dry state was where you could not, you could buy 3-2 beer, and we had lots of beer joints, but I never went into them because I didn't know if I would come out. I was told never go in there. So, but all the high school kids, the boys, all went in there. That was where they went in and played pool and drank beer. And so, but you couldn't go into a restaurant or a bar and order a drink. you had to buy your bottle of booze, and the owners of that salon would keep it with your name on it. So then you could go in and you could get your drink. That was how they got around the being a dry state. So we had lots of liquor stories, of course, but I was pretty naive about the whole idea of drinking. My father never drank. I think he would have been a lot happier if he could have. He was not a happy man. And, you know, I just wasn't around it. So I left Kansas and moved to the state of Wyoming. I don't know if we have anybody here who knows Wyoming. I was talking with Diana, and in the back I see someone. And I moved to Laramie, which is a college town. It's the only university in Wyoming. And I had relatives there. So I settled in at Laramie. And I hit the bars because Laramie was not a dry city and not a dry state. So, you know, alcohol was everywhere. And I kind of felt a freedom about that. And I would go down with the people from work and you know, hit the bars, dance, honky-tonk, and just had a whole lot of fun. And I didn't realize it at the time, but that's where I met my husband. Now, I was not looking for an alcoholic. I didn't really know what an alcoholic was, but it was just like the two of us were running. You know, you see that when you're running together and two sick people found each other. And I ended up marrying him in the Presbyterian Church there in Laramie, Wyoming. And that's where we started our life, in a snowstorm. We had planned to go to Denver for a honeymoon, but the roads were closed. So we barely made it over to Cheyenne. Now, when we were planning this, we decided, we had been dating for a little bit of time, and it was about a year. And so he said that he had gotten some advice from a friend, and that was either shit or get off the pot. And I said, really? That's the way you think of our relationship? Well, that's wonderful, dear. So I should have realized. So we decided to flip a coin. You know, two drunk people, what else are you going to do? Okay, so we flipped the coin. Heads, we'd get married. Tails, we wouldn't. And it came up heads. And he and I looked at each other, and he said, you want to go for 2 out of 3? I said, sure, let's do that. So we flipped it again, and guess what? Heads. So there we were. We had decided we'd get married with the flip of a coin. Now, he was not employed at the time. And I don't know what I was thinking. I thought, well, we can live on love. Sure. So, but he did find a job. He wanted to be able to put it in the paper that he was working at the time. So he did find a job, and we moved to Cheyenne, which is about 45 miles. Yeah, the daddy of them all is there, the rodeo, the big Cheyenne days. So we moved to Cheyenne, and that's where we lived, and we had our kids there. We had a girl first and then a boy. And I'll get back to that in just a while. That they're not finished yet. So we're here, and you know, in Wyoming, there's really not a lot to do, especially in the winter. So, you know, a lot of people drink. That's what they do to keep warm and to get to know and talk and visit, because there's nothing else to do in Wyoming. And we didn't ski. Now, that would have been nice, but we didn't ski. And so we ended up doing a lot of arguing. And, you know, it never really centered on one thing. It could have been many things that we argued about, but most of it was about control. And we would go round and round about that. Who had control? We tried everything. You know, they say there's two kinds of Al-Anons. There's the Al-Anon that just wants everything peaceful, kind of like the doormat Al-Anon, lets everything go. Well, that wasn't me. I was the toe-to-toe Al-Anon, and I was not going to have anybody tell me what to do. I knew I was right, and so we had this game. I was talking with Greg about it this morning. We had this game that when we argued, both of us would get so mad that one of us would go up and get the suitcase out of the closet, bring it down, and start packing the clothes. And after the clothes were packed, we'd stand there and look at each other because we had nowhere to go. And what are we going to do? So take all the clothes out, put the suitcase back up in the closet until the next time. He would say, I don't have to put up with that. I can leave. And I said, there's the door. And suitcase would come down, and we'd go through the whole thing again. We tried everything. And I mean everything, counseling, we tried religion, we tried books on every subject. We were both readers, and we thought we could figure this out. Then finally, we came up with the idea, and this was going to work. We moved to Arizona. Yeah. Some of you have done that. I can tell. You know, it's called the geographic. And the thing is, whatever problems we were having in Cheyenne, they found their way right there to Arizona with us. So we never really did solve any problems. One night, I remember I was so mad, I locked the door when he was outside. And he was pounding on the door saying, let me in, let me in. I wasn't going to let him in, you know. That would do him good. Our six-year-old daughter at the time bravely went to the door and unlocked it. And I just felt so humiliated and so small, but he had deserved that. And, you know, when I look back on it now, I just think, how in the world did I think that was going to solve anything by locking him out? Now, I heard Jay say last night he was locked out with the suitcases and they changed the locks. I never thought about that. I should have. So we had, again, the arguments that started. This was on down the line. We'd been married for 19 years, and we were settled in Glendale, Arizona. Our kid's daughter was 15, and she was in high school. And she'd done a few things, been kind of rebellious, but one night she didn't come home. And I cried and went through all of her stuff to try to find out where she was. And, you know, my husband just got mad. He was angry and mad that she wasn't. We needed help. We didn't understand what was going on. And we stumbled, and I mean stumbled, into a group that's called Pathways. And it is for teen sobriety. We didn't know what she was doing, what she was using, nothing, but she was rebelling. Both my husband and I were told that the best thing that you can do for your daughter is to get into recovery. And he looked at us and he said, I think maybe there's an alcoholic and an Al-Anon right here. How could he ever spot that? So we followed that advice because we weren't doing it for us. We were doing it for our daughter. And we did get into recovery then. And I don't know what I would have done if it hadn't have been for Al-Anon right then, because I felt like I was such a failure with our daughter as a mom. My kids were the most important thing to me, and I didn't know where my daughter was. I didn't know if she was laying in the gutter somewhere, and I just felt like I was just at the bottom. And I started going. I went to my first meeting of Al-Anon. And at that meeting, I realized that I was not part of the solution. I heard at that meeting that I was part of the problem. And I realized that I was blaming my husband for what my daughter was doing, and it was all his fault. And I had told him that. And I realized that wasn't true. It wasn't all his fault. And when I got home that night, I sort of did my number 9 amends to him. And I told him I was sorry that I had blamed him and pointed the finger at him. And I had 3 pointing back at me. You know how that is. And I said, I want to be a solution. I want to help. And I'm going to try to change. I'm going to try to be different. And together, maybe we can help our daughter. And you know, that made all the difference in the world to my husband. And I always had been with thought that if they would only listen to me, they would get better. But that wasn't the truth. It wasn't. I needed to listen to them and realize that I needed to change the way I did things. One of the things that I saw that I needed to change, I was a rager. And I'm sure you're thinking, oh, this sweet thing is a rager? I could be very sarcastic. I could be very loud, and I could rage very well. And I did it. Oh, I didn't do it outside the house. I didn't do it to anybody at church or at school or whatever. I only did it to the people I loved. And I said, God, I don't want to do that anymore. It doesn't help. What does it help? And God took that from me. Now it rears its ugly head at times. In those 27 years, I'm sure that I have raged one or two times. But I try very hard not to. And we try to have conversations instead of yelling. And when I made my amends to my kids, I told them that I was sorry. And they were at the age, they didn't really, you know, get it. Oh, Mom, you're okay, you know, that kind of thing. But I said the best way I can make my amends to my kids is to quit doing it. And that was what I tried to do from then on. Okay. So we kept going to our meetings and Al-Anon, and I did 30 and 30 that summer, because the only time I really had a feeling of serenity was when I was at the meetings. Our daughter was out of our home for about 6 weeks, living with another girl that was in the program and her parents. And that was the hardest thing, it really was. So at the end of the time, she did come home. She did finish high school. Our relationship has improved. She has a daughter, our only granddaughter, our only grandchild, and she's a counselor. And I said, you know what these kids are going through because you lived it, and she is a very successful counselor. So, and I thank Al-Anon for that. If it hadn't been for Al-Anon, I don't know what our relationship would be today. I did work the steps with my sponsor, and I just like to go through them. It's important that Al-Anon's, excuse me, work the steps just the way that AAs do with our sponsor. The first three steps I learned were, I can't, God can, I think I'll let him. I had been raised in a church, and so I had my visions of what God was in organized religion. But this was different. This was a God of my own understanding. And a God that I knew would help me through any situations because he had done it in the past. And I have no trouble with believing that he can do it now. So the first three steps, but for someone who is as prideful as I was at the time, admitting that I can't do it, that was hard. That was really difficult for me. But I had come to the end. I knew that I couldn't get my daughter back. I knew I couldn't help her, but God could. And so I decided that I was going to hand her over to her higher power, and that her higher power knew what she needed. The next steps, the action steps, 4 through 9, I made my, and I was just really writing down all of the things that I needed to talk about with my inventory. I didn't want to leave anything out because I wanted it to work. And I thought if I left anything out, it wouldn't work. So it was very comprehensive. And I went through it with my sponsor, the defects of my character, and doing things differently. And then steps 10, 11, and 12, that's what I live today, the maintenance steps. I kept my side of the street clean. I tried to, worked on my relationship with my higher power. Let God be the one in control. Instead of me praying to him, telling him what he needed to do, I prayed that his will would be done for that day. And I tried to be of service, which is step 12. And, you know, that is the thing I learned most of all, that if you want to grow in this program, you need that third side of the triangle. We have the steps that are gives us our recovery, unity in the traditions, but service through the concepts. And if we're missing that one side, the program doesn't do as well. I need all three sides. And so I did put myself into service, and I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to go back and be a part of the World Service Conference for 3 years. And one of the years, we visited Bill and Lois's home, Stepping Stones. If you haven't been there, it is so worth it. How many have been there? Have you been there to see it? I sat in that kitchen where Lois had talked to the wives, and I just thought if Lois hadn't been willing to do that, if she hadn't invited the wives in to talk while the men were in there with their AA business, we wouldn't have the Al-Anon program today. And I want that program to be there for everyone who needs it, like I did. And the only way that we can keep the program is by giving of service and making sure that it is here for everyone that needs it. So, how is it today? There are some good things and bad things. You know, once the drinking stopped, the thinking is still there. I heard that a long time ago, and I didn't realize how true those words are. And you know, both my husband and I have to work at our program, and we have to work at our relationship. We'll be married 48 years in November. Thank you. And I thank God for both of these programs, because without it, I know we wouldn't have lasted much, because like Beth said, when I came into program, I was looking for that one thing that my husband was going to do, and he'd done a lot of things, but that one thing that I just couldn't forgive him for, and I could be out the door. But he never did that. And then he got into recovery, and it has made all the difference, and I got into recovery. And that's the only way that our marriage is still going strong today. Also, in 2025, we'll both have 30 years in the program. And that will be something that we can celebrate along with our 50 years of marriage. And I can't wait for it to get here. So I'm looking forward to 2025. Now, I did mention earlier about my daughter. And I haven't talked about my son. He is in recovery now. He was always the good kid growing up. He waited until he was out of school, and then he really went to pieces. So we got that call that no parent wants to get from the emergency room, and my son had been brought in, and they had to revive him. He had been taking pills and alcohol, was at a bar. And if the people that worked there had not called the ambulance, he would have died. They had to resuscitate him and get him breathing again. And we got that call and we rushed down to the emergency room. And we realized that there was a lot of things that were going on with her son that we didn't realize. He was diagnosed with bipolar 2, which is, I didn't even know there was a difference, but that is the worst. That's where most of the suicides occur. And because they switch from mania to depression, back to mania and depression. And it's that going back and forth that they just really have trouble with. He also was an alcoholic and a gambler addict. So we found the rooms of GA and Gammonon. And he no longer does those things. He is recovering from that. He also started turning yellow about a year ago. And we both knew that that was a liver problem. He went into the hospital and the doctor said his liver is pretty well shot. And if he doesn't stop drinking, he will die. So came home from the hospital, and he tried to stop. And it was the weekend that I was speaking at the AA convention. We got home that weekend, and we got a phone call on it was either Sunday or Monday, I can't remember which. And it just said, and Don didn't tell me, my husband didn't tell me, he got it on his phone, that our son had been in an accident. So nothing more. He had an eye watch or whatever those watches are, and they tell when something has happened, they can tell. And they called the contact number that Scott had in there, our son. And he had been in a car accident on Highway 17 on the way to Flagstaff. So he was in jail. So we went up there and found out that he was on his way to Vegas, been drinking, and he ran off the road, and we saw the car. The car was totaled, and there was no way that he should have been walking away from that wreck. But there he was. For some reason, he was alive. So we came back home, and he said, "Mom, this has changed my life. I'm ready to make changes." And he's been going to AA ever since. And we're just so proud of him for doing that. He is in recovery, finally. So we just hope, I don't know if he'll stay in it. I don't know what God has in store for him. But we do know that our higher power will be with us and we'll be able to do. He is living with us right now because he is not able to take care of himself. And so we are just taking it day by day and hour by hour. But, you know, this program, I'm so thankful for it because without my Al-Anon friends, my sponsor, who I called that very night, and my husband's friends in AA and his sponsor and everybody that supported us through that, it would have been a totally different story. I would have been raging all the way up there and all the way back. We were talking about that. I said, can you imagine the two of us doing this without our programs as we go to get our son out of jail? No. I mean, it wouldn't have been a possibility. So I just want to close. I don't know what time it is. Oh, here. Yeah, I'll get you out of here a little early. I want to close with the story of our granddaughter. She's such a blessing. How many of you are grandkids? Aren't they? Oh, gosh, a lot of us. They are just the epitome of love and the language of the heart. What would we do without them? They're our legacy. They really are. And I took care of her all the time when her mother was working and she came to our house. And the first thing she does is take off her shoes and go get something to eat. And I know she feels like it's her home. But anyway, when she was little, she came over and she said, Grandma, you know why I like to come here with you and Grandpa? She says, because you're always happy. And that just touched my heart so much. And I said, thank you, Al-Anon. Thank you, AA, because we are happy today, and we would not be here without you. So thank you all. Thank you for my money, too. That was... Don't tell my husband I won, if you know him. But no, we run an honest program, so I won't tell him. But thank you for being such good listeners. It's been a privilege to be here with you. Thank you.